The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
This is Amanda LaPlante, and you're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. With me today is Jessica Manella Litwack. She's a social worker, certified gentle sleep coach, and the creator of Mama Space. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm excited to talk with you, having gone through that whole phase of having a baby that didn't sleep, and then having a toddler that didn't sleep, and then now having a preteen that sometimes doesn't want to sleep. It's just so awesome to have you here to be able to pick your brain about ways that families can get better sleep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so important.
Absolutely. It's very, very important. And you're right. I think families encounter different issues at different stages and don't know what they're in for when they have a new baby. So, and then it goes from there.
Yeah. In so many ways. A little bit about who you are and what you do.
So I'm a social worker. I got my degree here in WashU. And then I became certified as a gentle sleep coach by Kim West, who wrote a book called Good Night Sleep Tight. You can find it on any bookshelf or on Amazon, you know, for parents who are looking for a solution. And I basically fell into that after being really interested in supporting moms and families after I had my first child, who's now 8. My daughter is 8. My son is 5.5. And I just really found that there's a lot of power behind women helping each other and validating each other and supporting one another. And so I started a group to really find a community, really for myself at the time, that I called Mama Space, that now has 26,000 members, which shows you really women are seeking that out. And then, you know, from there, that's really where I, you know, became more interested in sleep and how can I help families get more sleep since it impacts so much. You know, how can you get your children to sleep more so you can sleep more and just have a more, you know, functional family in life. And so that's when I became a certified gentle sleep coach about 6 years ago. And so I've been doing that, helping families all over the place, not just in St. Louis. And I really enjoy it. I work with kids starting at around 4 months old up through 6 years. And so we work together. I work with the parents. You know, I don't go into homes and sleep on the baby's floor or anything. But,
we're not having sleepovers here. No, there's no campouts.
Been there, done that. Okay. With my own.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I work with the parents to really come up with a comfortable solution for them, you know, to improve the sleep in their household. Yeah.
So, okay, we're going to dive into that even further. I think it's awesome work that you're doing. And I want to talk about first Mama Space, though, a little bit more about that group and what goes on in that group.
Yeah. Sure. So when I started it, you know, again, I said selfishly, I had a difficult child, right? I hate the question of, do you have an easy baby? Is she a good baby? And you're like, do you really want me to answer that honestly? Like, no, she's not. I have to hold her to sleep. I have to wear her on me constantly. And I, you know, for me, I had been around babies, but I was like, whoa, this is so much harder than I ever imagined it would be. And so I created this Facebook group because, you know, everyone was on Facebook. You're holding your baby, you're nursing your baby, you have your phone in your hand. And so for me, it was like, let's just create something as easy as possible to allow mommies to connect with one another and feel supported. And, you know, I think there's guilt around saying this isn't that fun. This is really, really hard. And obviously it resonated. And I, with my background in social work, I really was very committed to it being about support, no judgment, community, feeling really a part of something. And so obviously other moms feel that way too, because now there's 26,000 members and my daughter's 8. So I always measure it. I was like, well, she was 6 months when it started and now, you know, she's 8 and I've seen lots of different things come up and it's become an amazing community, something I'm really proud of and happy that it's there for people who tell me, you know, it's made a big difference in their lives.
So what are a few stories that come come to mind? Just things that have happened in that group that resonate.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the most amazing stories was a mother who, I think her breast milk supply was dwindling, and she posted saying, you know, I really am committed to this. I think her child had some health issues, and she was like, breast milk is supposed to be one of the, you know, most important things, and I really don't have supply. I don't know what to do. And without really even asking people, she started to get, I think, like hundreds or maybe thousands of ounces showing up on her doorstep. And it actually was on local news. She was like, you know what? This group just really rallied. Like, they want, you know, my baby to be successful, me to feel supported. And so she was able to give her child this. And I think she was ill. There was something going on like that. And it was just an amazing story. And then another time, you know, we've had some moms with some pretty serious postpartum depression issues who needed support. And again, just seeing people saying, you know, don't be ashamed. I went through this. Because I think when you hear someone else has gone through something, you feel like, okay, it's not just me. And so either seeking the help they needed or talking to a loved one, a husband, a, you know, parent saying, I need help, or going and taking that step to, you know, talk to a doctor. I've seen that over and over again. And, you know, I've had personal conversations with some of those members, because something I'm committed to is really following up with these people. You know, I have a team of admins, and when we, you know, sort of red flag a post as something we're concerned about, we want to follow up. We want to make sure it's not just out there in the social media, you know, universe. We check in with those people. And so I've seen some amazing success stories of people who are really suffering, who are in much better places.
So changing lives and making a difference, you know. Sure. So let's talk a little bit about your sleep coaching.
Okay, definitely.
Degree in social work, you're mm-hmm. focused on women, and then now, you know, you had this child with these sleep issues, yes. right? And so you're dealing with that. And fine, what were some of the things that you found that worked really well for you with your child? And I'm curious, because I had a child that sounds like it was a very similar experience right. as you were describing it.
Yeah. So my daughter was very attached to breastfeeding, attached to being held. And as a new mom, first child, I was like, I'll do whatever I need to. I was not really comfortable with the advice I kept getting. Put in the earplugs, drink a glass of wine, and close her door. And I was like, I just can't do it. You know, no judgment to the people that can. But I also felt like it didn't fit with her personality. Not only my philosophy as a parent, but I just, like, she would cry forever. And she's still a very feisty, redheaded 8-year-old girl. And, you know, it's not one size fits all. And so for me, finding the book, Good Night, Sleep Tight, and, you know, reading Kim West's website, which is just thesleeplady.com, and finding solutions that allowed me to stay with her in the room throughout the process, but gradually teaching her, you know, you're okay. I'm still here, you know. I'm going to respond to you in a way that you might not like, meaning I'm not picking you up and nursing you, but I'm still here for you. That's what really worked for us, sort of ease out of her room and, you know, for the nap times as well. And same with my son. You know, when the second baby came around, I knew some of the choices I was going to make. And to be honest, I like, you know, my baby in my room, and I even put him in my bed sometimes. You know, I'm not against co-sleeping when it works for you. It's just at a certain point, you decide that's not what I want. And for some people it is. They'll co-sleep for as long as, you know, they enjoy it. But for me, you know, I knew at a certain point it was time to give my children the skill of going to sleep on their own, because it's a lifelong skill. And if you don't know how to do it, could have sleep issues your whole life.
That is absolutely so true.
Yes.
So true.
Yes.
Okay. So when do you know? I guess that's the question I want to ask. When do you know that it's time to make that transition?
I think it's so different for each family. So, you know, people will call me and say, my baby's 12 weeks old. And I have to say, I don't work with families to coach their babies before 16 weeks. You know, we just think that that's such an important developmental time of bonding and where you're attaching to each other, especially breastfeeding, feeding, etc. But, you know, you're really looking for, is this working for both of us, right? Because there are things that you, if you're rocking your baby to sleep, you put them down and they sleep for 12 hours, great, you know, but if you're rocking them to sleep and they're up every 2 hours needing you to rock them to sleep, that doesn't work. And so once you're past that, you know, 4.5 month age, and you start to see that things are not really working for you anymore, or like, let's say a toddler's two, and they're not falling asleep until 9:30 at night, you're seeing their behavior decline. Those are, you know, the signs we really look for to say something has to change, you know. But it's not about my goals. I don't say this is what every 6-month-old baby should be doing. This is what every, you know, 1-year-old. It's, I always say to my clients, like, it's not for me to come in and say, this is what it should look like. This is, what do you want? And how can we get there?
That's a sign of a truly good coach.
Oh, thanks.
Absolutely. So when you say solution focused therapy, you say you think of sleep coaching as a solution focused therapy. What does that mean?
Well, I think that that, you know, having my background in social work, and I really was interested in clinical work. You know, I understood therapy is about, you know, you come in with an issue and you need to resolve it to some extent. And I think that these families come to me saying, I can't function like this anymore. You know, I have moms crying to me on the phone. I have families saying to me, like, our relationship is on the decline. Like, we're having all these issues. And so I think there's emotional pieces, there's dysfunction going on, there's communication problems. And so really, we're coming up with a solution for this issue that is affecting everybody in the family. You know, even if there are other siblings, you know, they might be, you know, not getting to have time with mommy because she's stuck breastfeeding for 3 hours every night at bedtime, you know. So I really do look at it as a therapy in a sense, because we are working on these issues to resolve them.
When we talk about all of these different ways that sleep impacts relationships, mm-hmm. and really everything, yeah. right? If you're not sleeping, nothing goes well.
Totally.
Nothing goes well.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about why sleep is so critical to health.
You know, everybody knows what it feels like when you've stayed up too late or had to wake up too early for like a flight. You just don't feel good. I mean, there's lots of studies out there, you know, where you can see that your memory can be affected. Your just cognitive abilities, like you're just not functioning at your best. And we talk about, like, let's say new mothers, obviously that's my area of expertise, but a new mom who has to go back to work, you know, let's say 10 weeks, 12 weeks after her baby is born and the baby's not sleeping, you know, she's probably not going to be at her highest functioning self at work. Or even a mom who's at home, you know, or a dad who, you know, hasn't slept more than a few hours at a time for months, they're not going to be able to attend to their child's needs in the same way. And so your mood is affected, your memory, you know, your just ability to make decisions, and the list goes on and on. So, you know, all of that information can be found on the, you know, the National Sleep Foundation's website, but I think it's also intuitive. You know, when you're not yourself, when you're tired.
Absolutely. I remember just walking. I really felt like a zombie. I just walked around like a zombie. And then I noticed my postpartum depression symptoms got so much worse. They were so vastly exacerbated by the lack of sleep.
Yes. Yes. And that is so true. Actually, that's something I was reading about recently, you know, as someone who was really interested in postpartum depression and anxiety. You know, there are studies that say that women who actually didn't have any symptoms when the baby was brand new, and then 8 weeks later, you know, were tested for, you know, see if any symptoms had emerged, the ones who really weren't sleeping very much or had a baby who cried a lot, which is due to being exhausted, you know, had these symptoms starting to emerge. And so whether you already are someone who's been affected by anxiety or depression in the past, or you haven't, being exhausted absolutely brings those symptoms up and can get a lot worse. So that's like one of the things you'll read about, you know, find help from other people to come and watch your baby, you know, don't feel bad about asking for help. And I love Postpartum Stress International. They are an amazing organization. PSI. The minute you go to their website, they have a phone number. They will connect you with people in your community to talk you through, you know, troubles that you're having. But you can find things on there specifically about sleep and, you know, what you can do to help yourself.
Well, I'm going to say what a lot of people say to you. Like, where were you a few years ago? I could have really used your help.
I know.
Yeah, this is such great information for sure. National Sleep Foundation recommendations for health. Like, do you have any for sleep and
for health? It's interesting. They actually changed it recently, and there's a really great chart on their websites. When you go to their website, one of the first things you can click on is sleep recommendations. And, you know, it really does change. You know, I talk to parents a lot about schedules and sleep recommendations. So talking about, you know, it's constantly changing. You know, a newborn baby sleeps 16 hours in a 24-hour period, you know, but by the time they're two or three, they're sleeping maybe 13 hours. But there's a range. Every person's going to be different. You know, you might be an adult who says, if I don't get 8 hours, I'm a mess the next day. Or you say, hey, you know what, with six, I'm okay. But the real recommendation is somewhere between 7 and 9 hours, which is where you get that sort of 8 hours is usually the ideal for people. But I certainly found as a new mom, I now can function pretty well on 7. Whereas before I'd be like, oh no, you know, in my 20s, if I didn't have 8, I was a disaster. But
I need to know your secrets. I'm a 9 hour a night person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which is, it's tough.
I mean, I wouldn't mind, but you know,
coffee. It's tough. Yeah. I wish that worked. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. But as far as, you know, setting yourself up for good sleep, you know, that those are some of the things, because people will say, I have trouble falling asleep at night, or I wake up so early and I can't fall back asleep. And so, you know, everyone's heard about turn off the TV, turn off your screens, you know, before bed. It's really true, because that light that, you know, comes off of all of our screens in the darkness is really not good for us.
I mean, yeah, talking about blue light.
Absolutely.
Right, is what, yeah, if people want to look into that a little bit further. Yeah, blue light.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, sticking to a schedule, meaning like don't go to sleep, you know, at midnight, you know, half the time and 9, half the time. Your body really will adjust to a rhythm. And this is, it's the same, you know, I say it for kids, like, that's why we stick to a, you know, consistent bedtime, because your body knows when it's getting ready for bed, you know, the melatonin that your body produces, you know, you can make the room dark, you can do mellow activities, you know, treat yourself well so you can set yourself up to be in a good, you know, sleep habit. And then the environment is so important, you know, darkness, I love blackout curtains, white noise, all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and what you touched on there, all mm-hmm. right, so with circadian rhythm, yes. for instance, you know, it really, our body does need these natural patterns. It needs consistency mm-hmm. and it needs schedules.
Absolutely.
And our hormones are also intricately tied, and everything just, it's a big cascade that can happen if things get off. So it's important to stay on.
Absolutely. And it takes a long time to get back. I think people will say, oh, you know, my toddler, for instance, has never slept well. And I just, you know, they expect things to get better sometimes in like 3 nights, you know, and say, it will take a little bit of time. You know, when you're severely sleep deprived, it's going to take a minute to get back to, you know, your highest functioning self.
And so we had some notes here on mm-hmm. Talking about parents and sleep deprivation. So do you want to dive into that a little bit further?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, you know, we talked a little bit about how, you know, it affects your memory and your ability to just function at your best self. I think also the depression and the anxiety that we see, but a really big toll can be taken on relationships. And, you know, when you have a new baby, anyone who's been through that knows that it's hard on relationships. You don't really know what to expect. And I think, you know, let's say you have a mom who's nursing, who's the only one who's getting up with the baby at night. And then, you know, she, even if she says, I'm making this choice, I'm going to let my husband sleep, she's going to resent him. You know, and then what happens is that sort of bubbles under the surface, and then there's going to be a fight at 3 a.m. And I tell all my clients, do not have a discussion about what you should do about the baby's sleep problems at 3 a.m. It never ends well, you know. But I work with these people, and I do everything over Skype or FaceTime, so I see, you know, their dynamics. And it's important not to ignore it. I think I say both parents have to be committed. And I think that that is just a big piece of all of this, is that, you know, they say we're either fighting more, we're not talking more, we resent each other, you know. And then, of course, the people who are going back to work, or, you know, their social lives suffer. I have a lot of people who say, we can't get a babysitter, we don't go out at night because no one can get the baby to sleep at me, a child's gonna wake up, or I have to sleep in the bed with them, you know, to go to sleep. And so I just think it can affect all facets of your life, you know, honestly.
Yeah, 100%. So when someone reaches out to you and they're looking for support,
mm-hmm.
what does that process look like? Where do you start?
So it always starts with a conversation. You know, people say, help. I get a lot of emails around 5 a.m. you know, where they're like, it was a horrible night. So we start with a conversation, what's going on? You know, I get the information, I explain who I am and what I do. And really, you know, it starts with a consultation. Like I said, I do everything virtually face to face. And we talk about schedules and routines and how to be consistent and all of that, because I think sleep hygiene and good sleep habits is where it starts. You can't just jump to the problem and say, here's your plan. Step by step, you need to say, oh, well, your baby's going to sleep at 10 o'clock at night. Let's shift that a little bit earlier, because that's not developmental. Mentally appropriate. But, you know, after that, after we say these are all of the big picture things, we're going to focus on your issue. And so it always is a crutch. So a crutch is defined as something that you do for your child they can't do for themselves. So patting their backs, you know, till they fall asleep, rubbing their head, rocking them, nursing them, etc. They're depending on that to fall asleep. So they don't know how to do it on their own, you know? And so if you eliminate that at bedtime, we always start with that, then that's their expectation. And so over time, this is how I fell asleep at bedtime. I was put down in my crib, drowsy but awake. And then, you know, at 3 a.m. when I woke up, I didn't have to be rocked back to sleep. I have to get that skill back, you know, at 3 a.m. And so it takes some time, of course. And parents say, but what happens when I put them down, you know? And they say, well, that's when the coaching comes in. Drowsy but awake, I think, is like a really important term that I talk to everyone about. And I actually give my clients a little scale. So I'll just tell you what that is really quickly. So 1 to 5 is the drowsy but awake scale. So imagine, you know, 1 is wide awake. You were just playing, bouncing them on your knee, and then you say, okay, good night, and you plop them in the crib. That's not really nice or conducive to good sleep. And then you've got 5, where that's the parent who either rocked them for 25 minutes and then tiptoed to the crib, laid them down, you know, slid their hands out and like somersaulted out of the room so they didn't make any noise. So we don't want that either. You want to be at a 3. So the bedtime routine helps you get that baby to a 3, or child, you know, whatever age they are. And then it's their job to get from a 3 to a 5. And that's where they're getting those skills to soothe themselves, to learn that, okay, I'm safe in my bed. I don't need to be rubbed, you know, on the back or sung a song 25 times, you know, before I fall asleep. I can do it. And then they start to expect that in the middle of the night as well. And that's where the process comes in of learning, okay, I can sleep. And then they just don't wake up anymore.
So, all right, if somebody doesn't develop these self-soothing skills though, right?
Right.
And you mentioned earlier that that can really be an issue for the rest of your life. You might have sleep issues for the. So how can that manifest if we were to skip this, right, with our kids? Then what?
Well, I mean, I've certainly heard of, you know, older children, so like 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, who either can't fall asleep for hours and hours at bedtime or require a parent to be sitting in the room with them, which again leads to issues with the parent. They feel like they're isolated, relationships suffer, all of that. But the child also, I mean, imagine, like, how are they going to go on sleepovers? How are they going to, you know, go to sleepaway camp? You know, they'll probably be a little bit embarrassed about that. I think there's just a lot of different things that it can impact. You've also got the kids who are waking up several times at night or early risers. So some people say, oh, well, my kid's just an early riser. They get up at 5 a.m. And I'm like, well, that's true. Some kids are early birds. But if you haven't really tried to work on that and, you know, look at the big picture and teach them sort of expectations, I think it's boundaries, expectations, like any sort of parenting, you know, issue. But then you've got teenagers who perhaps have sleep crutches, like playing a certain song. What if you have something that you're just, you can't sleep without a certain thing? You know, I don't look at white noise that way, as long as it's a white noise app. I mean, there's a million of those. I think those are okay. But if you've got something, oh, I have to play this song, or I have to, you know, have this specific blanket, like that can just get in the way, I think, of growth and development. You know, and adults are the same way. You hear about people with severe sleep issues who have to take the Ambien and all these other things to go to sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I was one of those kiddos that my mom was amazing about responding and always being there and, you know, really not ever letting me self-soothe and get to sleep, right? And I've kind of wondered, I have sleep issues to this day. Yeah. And it just made me wonder, like, kind of how does that really affect people?
Right. I mean, it's hard to say. It would be really interesting if there was like a longevity study to say, okay, these are kids that never really were taught how to soothe themselves. What happened as adults? You know, but I do want to say, as a gentle sleep coach, I firmly believe that you can still attend to your child and respond to them. You don't have to walk out of the room. And again, no judgment to the people who do that. I just think that you teach your children that they can trust you. You're going to respond to them when they have a need, right? So my 5-year-old, if he wakes up in the middle of the night, I'm not going to ignore him. I'm still going to go to him. But, you know, he understands this is his bed, this is his room, this is where you sleep, versus a child that walks into your room, climbs into your bed every night, and you just say, okay, you know, that's what we're going to do. And again, that works for some families. But I just think that I still believe parents should attend to their children, be there for them, and know that they're, you know, so the children understands they will respond. But at the same time, like, you have to be able to do those things yourself too. And if they don't have that skill, you know, they won't have the confidence. It's like attachment. If you go back and look at all of that, you know, children who have secure attachments know that they can go explore the world, but they can always come back.
Absolutely. There's some great research on that. All right. Let's talk a little bit about postpartum depression. How do you recognize it? What do you do?
Postpartum depression. I mean, I think it's so interesting because I've learned a lot more about it, you know, just being a mom myself, but also in school and then with sleep. So I think, you know, just feeling like you're not yourself. There's certainly normal postpartum, you know, mood swings. Your hormones are going crazy. You're sleep deprived, and all those things will impact how you're feeling on a day-to-day basis. And again, like I said, it's hard, especially if you have multiple children. You just feel like, where did I go? I think it's a problem when it starts to impact your life. You can't do your daily activities. You aren't functioning as you would like to, you know? And I think what's nice is that the stigma is going away to admit it. I think there's a lot of celebrities out there. I think the, you know, foundations out there like PSI are being a lot more vocal and visible. So, you know, recognizing, saying, I don't feel like myself, and it's not going away. So either talking to your OBGYN, talking to your regular doctor if you have a therapist, but talking to friends, joining support groups like Mama Space, finding real live groups. I think for some people who are feeling isolated, like I certainly did when my daughter would only nap in my arms, you know, 3 times a day, there are mom groups out there. It's MOM actually, and they're local. And just like being with other moms once a week can bring people out of that. But if you're talking about a real like clinical issue, you know, there's some very severe forms of depression, anxiety, you know, psychosis. And so if you recognize that in someone else, don't be afraid to speak up. You know, it can be scary. And I think that there are some partners who maybe don't recognize, you know, husbands who say, oh, well, maybe this is normal. But I think that there's a level where you have to say, you know, I'm going to step in. And I think people should not be afraid to do that.
That's a tough conversation. So how do you start that conversation?
With an actual person who's, you know, I think you just say, I love you and I care care about you. You know, I think it's always important not to be any sort of, no one would attack them, but you know, that sort of aggressive conversation and saying, I think something's wrong. And I was saying, you know, I love you and I care about you. And I just see that you're not yourself. Can I help? You know, and that's going to look different for whatever the situation is. I mean, if we're talking about a serious situation where you are concerned about someone's well-being, you know, whether it's suicidal ideology or you're concerned about the baby, it's more serious, you know, things should be done. Make a phone call. There are hotlines. You can call PSI. You can call 911, you know, but if we're talking about more day-to-day, just you feel like someone's not themselves, just really reaching out and saying, I'm here to help you, just offering to help and really not pushing it, but saying, listen, I'm serious. Because you hear a lot of them say, oh no, the mom's like, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. And I'm one of those people who be like, I love holding babies. I really do. I really want you to take me up on this. You know, I really, you know, please go to sleep. You don't have to entertain me because so much pressure. I remember that being like, oh my gosh, all these people want to come visit. And I feel like I have to have lunch with them, but all I want to do is like take a nap with the baby. So I think also just as like a society recognizing moms don't want to put their makeup on and invite a cascade of people into their house. And so just also being respectful of those needs of new moms.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. So, all right, if somebody wants to reach out and work mm-hmm. with you, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Email is absolutely the best way, or my website, which has a contact page. So my email is just jessica@stlouissleepcoach.com, and the website is stlouissleepcoach.com. So I made it really easy. That is me. You will find on the front page, there's a contact page. You can just fill out your information, and it comes straight to me, and then we can set up a time to have that initial call. So basically, I tell people, I'd love to hear more about what's going on. I'll explain who I am and what I do, and then we go from there.
And is this something that they can take care of with their flexible spending account, or is there how
does
that work?
Yeah, so I don't accept insurance, but I will always provide an invoice if someone does have that option of an FSA. But I do tell people, you know, you're investing in life changing, you know, sleep.
Everything changes right. with sleep. Absolutely.
Right. Right.
Absolutely.
And I just want to add that Mama Space is just one word, MAMASPACE on Facebook. And so you can find me through there as well. I'm the main administrator. But if you're just looking for more support, community, I just think it's a great and valuable resource that people really need in their lives.
Well, we're lucky to have you doing that great work. Thank you so much, Jessica Manella Litwack, for being here today.
It was my pleasure. Enjoyed it.
My name is Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. For more information from me, find me online at amandalaplante.com or on facebook.com/getrealtoheal. For this and other episodes of Get Real to Heal, check out soundcloud.com/getrealtoheal and make it a great day.